Support for the Closing Market Report podcast comes from ADM. Their FarmerView mobile site features up-to-date futures, weather, market commentary, and local bids, and offers customers access to contracts, deliveries, and payments at adm.com/farmerview.
From the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report for the 31st day of July 2013. I'm Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Jackie Vakes. She's at Stewart Peterson from right here in Champaign County. And then a bit later in the program, we'll take a look at what's been happening in the world of agricultural news. The Environmental Working Group, by the way, has taken a look at the number of acres of wetland that are still in the United States and how that has changed over the last 5 years. It's a surprising result. You want to stay tuned for that one. And then, as we close out our program, we'll talk about the weather forecast with Drew Lerner at World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City. And it all happens right here on this Wednesday edition of the Closing Market Report, a production of Illinois Public Media from the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois.
Support comes from Stewart Peterson, since 1985 offering strategic commodity consulting and marketing services to help producers manage market opportunities and risks. Stewart Peterson develops strategies customized to each client's goals and operation size. More information at stewart-peterson.com.
Well, in Chicago on this Wednesday afternoon, futures finished the day mostly higher. September contract for the soft red winter wheat at $6.64 and a quarter, up 9 cents. December at $6.77, up 9 and a quarter. The hard red in Kansas City finished the September at $7.06 and three quarters, 10 and a half cents higher. And December hard red at $7.17 in the wheat pit there, up 8 and three quarters. Corn futures now, September contract $4.99, a settlement price up 3 and a half cents for December, rather for September. December at $4.79, a penny and a half higher. March at $4.91 and a half, up 1 and a quarter, and the May corn at $4.99 and a quarter, up 1 and a quarter. July futures $5.05 and a half, a penny higher, and September at $5.04 and a half, down 0.5 cent. August soybeans at $13.74, up 24 cents. September at $12.49 and three quarters, up 3 quarters. November beans $12.06 and a quarter, 3 and a quarter higher, and January at $12.11, up 3. March contract 5 cents higher, $12.12 and three quarters, and next year's July at $12.17, up 5 and a half cents. November beans of 2014 at $11.86 and three quarters finished 3 and a half cents higher. Bean meal futures on the day at $4.35.10, up 5.90, and the bean oil at $42.09, that's 2 cents higher. Live cattle futures on the afternoon finished the August at $121.45, they're down 20 cents. October 17 and a half lower at $125.47 and a half. Feeder cattle in the August contract at $153.42 and a half. Up 17 and a half for the day, and September's at 156.97 and a half, or up 37 and a half. Lean hogs finished at $97.57 and a half, and they finished up 70 cents on the afternoon. This is the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. Here's what the outside markets look like at this hour. Crude oil futures for the day. September contract, $105.24 a barrel, up $2.15. Gasoline at $3.04 and four tenths of a cent, 2.5 cents higher on the day. Ethanol futures at $2.29 and four tenths, up 5 and 9 tenths. And the spread between the two is now 75 cents. That's 3 and 3 tenths of a cent narrower than yesterday. Natural gas at $3.45 and a tenth, a penny and 9 tenths higher. And the diesel fuel at $3.04 and three tenths of a cent in New York at 3 and 6 tenths of a cent higher. Gold futures finished at $1,312.40 an ounce, down $11.90, and the U.S. dollar at 81.47. That's down 0.35 on the day. Here's what the weather forecast looks like for the Urbana-Champaign area this afternoon. A 30% chance of showers and thunderstorms yet this afternoon. A cloudy skies, a high of 75 degrees on a northwest wind at 5 miles an hour. Tonight, that 30% chance of showers and thunderstorms remains until 8 p.m., partly cloudy, a low of 64, and Thursday, sunny skies and 81 degrees. Thursday evening, partly cloudy, a low of 62, west-northwest winds at 5 to 7, they'll be light and variable, and Friday, a 50% chance of showers. After 8 a.m. in the morning, partly sunny and 78 degrees. Friday night, a 50% chance of showers and thunderstorms, mostly cloudy and 64. And on Saturday, a 40% chance of rainfall, that coming before 8 in the day, partly sunny with a high near 79 degrees. A more complete look comes up at the weather forecast at the bottom of this half hour. We'll talk with Drew Lerner of World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City.
Agricultural market reports on WILL are made possible with support from Busey. Small business is the next big business. So Busey offers solutions to fit growing business needs, from customizable lending options to succession planning. Busey, your dream, our promise.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report. It is the 31st day of July, 2013. On the phone line with us, as usual for a Wednesday, Jackie Vakes. It's Stuart Peterson from right here in Champaign County. Good afternoon to you, Jackie.
Well, good afternoon, Todd.
Well, tell me about the news of the day to begin with.
I think it pretty much shocked the world yesterday. We saw Russia actually drop out of the Belarusian, or which is Belarus and Russia, together potash cartel. There are two potash cartels in the world that basically control 70% of all the potash. And so Ukraine, which is the Russian side, they said they're going to try and expand their business on their own into India, China, and Southeast Asia. And there had been rumors that basically each of Belarus and Russia were selling on the side, outside of their compact or their agreement. And so this was really a big shock. And what it did was it sent shares of the other cartel, which is the Canpotex, potash of Saskatchewan, Mosaic, and Argium, down hard. And so, you know, this could be a real big win for our farmers. It could drop potash prices significantly. I mean, we know from past, and they said it themselves, it cost them about $60 a ton to be able to produce it. Then you have to add on all the transportation costs and everything. But they said it's unlikely it's going to drop below 200. But, you know, that's still a better outlook picture than what we had had. I guess the double-edged sword would be, will the trade now say, well, now corn prices can be lower if input prices are lower?
Well, maybe and maybe not. According to yesterday's report that we heard here on this program from Gary Schnittke, next year for the 2014, as long as cash rents and fertilizer don't drop, that it's not going to be a very pretty year. And I'm wondering whether you have thought very much about that and what it means for the 2014 crop and pricing out both corn, maybe even soybeans.
Well, we have been very aggressive, actually, in the 2014 crop. We have puts in place. We did it primarily. We bought puts and sold calls because we felt that once the crop was in the ground and we started to see more positive weather and everything else, that we were in a situation where if we really do come in with a good-sized crop, and Landworth came out this morning, actually increased their corn yield to 158.5 with a 14 billion bushel crop, and that was a 350 million bushel increase, you know, that 14 was going to look very ugly price-wise. And we approached it from the standpoint that we wanted to cover crop insurance prices for February. So I think the highest we've got is we went in the money and bought $6 puts and sold some calls above the market. We bought 570 puts and sold above the market, and actually had quite a few guys calling yesterday. We did the same type of thing for beans just because we're very fearful, but corn more so than beans. Corn has such a big carryout, and if we do have a decent crop, and even if it would only come in at a 13.5, it's still got a big carryout. Could have very negative impact on 2014.
So while you are fairly hedged, fairly well hedged along the way for 2014, you're still of a mind that the prices being offered at this point offer up some opportunity for next year still?
Well, only if you're going to approach it from an option standpoint. You know, if you have to sell futures at 506, not to say it might not be good. But at the same time, I think you need to have yourself in a position. You can get into a position using synthetic futures and actually protect more price. And so that's why we always look to the options, because it gives us that opportunity. But, you know, the reality is this. If we all of a sudden find ourselves, they did a survey, and they guessed on December 31st we'd be at 480 for corn on 2013. That wouldn't be the worst thing in the world, you know, from that standpoint. But at the same time, you just can't take that kind of guess. Who wants to have a $4 insurance situation for next year, or even a $5 when we look at what the costs are? And so I think you have to weigh it. You've got to look at what your input costs are, look at what your potential returns are, and then determine and go in and do this. But some guys just have a really hard time doing any hedging that far in advance, and that's why I think it's really smart to look at it more from a February insurance standpoint. It's not so far away.
Well, let's come back to the near term. It's the end of the month, and of course, we'll have First Notice Day again soon.
Yep, we had First Notice Day today, which meant that any of the lawns that didn't want to get delivered on or risk the potential delivery in August beans had to be out of their positions. We no longer have limits in that contract, so it sometimes can get pretty doggone wild. You know, it'll be interesting to see what tomorrow actually brings. Being the start of another another month, weather forecasts that continue to look cool, and dryness, you know, moving up into the Minnesota-Iowa area, boy, it's going to be tough. And as we move toward the August 12th report, I think the trade will probably do some short covering, and they'll have a little bit of fear in them, especially in the bean side of things, because I just don't see with wheat harvest being as late as it was that we planted as many double crop beans as what they thought we were going to.
And so when you take all of that into account, you're feeling that the bean market, and Landworth said this today in their numbers too, has some potential in it still.
Oh, yes. In fact, I said it before on the radio, and I'll say it again. I am still bullish beans, even though we got beat over the head here, because I think when you look at the bigger picture, we are going to lose some acreage. We have beans that are short. We have beans. I have all kinds of issues going on, and you get out into the, we just had some friends over who did tours over in Iowa, and, you know, the beans in Iowa are just, it's pitiful is what it is. The best-looking beans, I believe, are from Indiana, Ohio. You know, you go over to the east. But I'll tell you, when you start herding beans in Illinois, in Iowa, potential for herd up in Minnesota, and these cold nights are not helping any. You know, it just slows the production down from a maturing standpoint, both on corn and beans. And we haven't had the sunshine we really normally get at this time of year. We need strong sunshine for beans to really finish out. So I'm very concerned about beans. And, you know, on the flip side of that, Todd, if beans do find, you know, some strong support, I think the ratio could go to 2.8, meaning that corn wouldn't gain as much as beans, but it also will not lose as much as it could have potentially lost otherwise. So Landworth actually lowered the bean crop just slightly, and I'm with them on that. I really think that, you know, the possibility or the likelihood of that is very, very high.
When you consider, as you look into the August 12 crop production report, the numbers that USDA will produce on beans in particular, will there be enough there for them to make a good assessment of how the crop is progressing? And I guess I'm thinking, Jackie, if we've slowed the crop down and it's behind to begin with, will they change anything or simply wait it out?
Well, you know, that's a really good question, Todd, because to be able to train, I'll guess what they'll do. We are, you know, we're going to have guys, of course, that are going to be out in the fields, and they did go out in the fields for this resurvey in many, many places. I have to believe that they'd have, after being out there and actually seeing, they may have some bias and they may make some adjustments. It all comes down to the expectation on what demand is going to be. You know, the big difference between beans and corn at this point in time is just that, you know, the demand situation in corn required a huge increase in demand, and that's with the expectation that the price is going to go lower. On the bean side of things, we have a very tight number on beans, and it continues to remain tight, and so exports is the key to that particular market. And I think, you know, today we had First Notice Day, we had absolutely no deliveries against beans at all. Only oil, and that was even lower than what they thought it was going to be. No deliveries against meal. That, to me, speaks volumes as to what the demand situation is. So I think, if anything, you know, that they've got themselves between a rock and a hard place in some respects. They can't go any lower on this year, necessarily, because we're already at 125 million bushels. And then you look at next year's, there I think they could make a move down. But they'll be very, very cautious as to how fast they do that, because we all remember when we went down to New Orleans and beans looked pretty tough and everything looked tough and we got a good rain and they really came on. If August would suddenly turn warmer, you know, we could still hammer out a pretty good bean crop. So I don't think they're going to be aggressive at it, but I do think that they could make some adjustments.
Jackie, thank you so much.
Thank you, Todd. Have a good one.
Hey, you too. Jackie Vakes is with Stuart Peterson, joins us here on the Closing Market Report for this Wednesday afternoon. You can hear it again at willag.org.
Support for today's broadcast comes from ADM. Their FarmerView mobile site features up-to-date futures, weather, market commentary, and local bids, and offers ADM customers access to contracts, deliveries, and payments. Available at adm.com/farmerview.
In today's agricultural news, more than 400 leading U.S. businesses and advocacy organizations, including the American Farm Bureau Federation, have sent a letter to U.S. House Speaker John Boehner and House Minority Leader Nancy Pelosi, calling on the House to enact immigration reform legislation. These organizations say reform of an outdated, broken immigration system is essential if the United States is to achieve a fully revitalized economy, providing rewarding, lasting jobs and opportunities for all Americans. Well, the Environmental Working Group has published an interactive map showing U.S. counties that have experienced the most dramatic conversion of wetlands, nearby habitat, and highly erodible land to row crops as commodity prices have risen. EWG's research shows the most dramatic wetlands loss has occurred in the Dakotas and Minnesota. Of all highly erodible land converted to cropland, 57% has occurred in Texas, Colorado, Oklahoma, Montana, Iowa, Missouri, Kansas, Nebraska, and the Dakotas. EWG Senior Vice President for Ag and Natural Resources, Craig Cox, says the data strongly suggest oversubsidized insurance policies are greasing the wheels of conversion to row crops. So the EWG has called for the Farm Bill to include conservation compliance for crop insurance and a sod saver provision to reduce crop insurance premium subsidies on native prairie or grassland planted with crops. And finally today, for the sixth year, Daniela Cinquera, Brazil's Ag Rural, has come to the United States to get a firsthand look at how the growing season is coming along. So far, what she has seen is very good, which is not such good news, she thinks, for back home.
I am Brazilian, so I am a little depressed because I've seen so many beautiful fields here. I've been to Michigan, Indiana, and now Ohio. And crops look really good here. So I hope I can find some worse fields in Iowa and maybe Minnesota. But so far, so good.
Sequoia says the current crop is a far cry from what she witnessed last year.
Last year was a disaster, right? So I remember when I was here 1 year ago and I was depressed for you guys because it looked so ugly, so bad. But, you know, you guys here in the U.S. have crop insurance, and we don't have it down there. So I know even when you have this big crop failures like you did last year, you are not so in trouble. So I'm happy for you.
And that's a look at today's agricultural news. You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. Up next, Senator Chuck Grassley from Iowa has some thoughts on the renewable fuel standard.
Support for agricultural programs comes from AgriGold Hybrids, featuring the AgriGold Giants, a group of five new hybrids designed to meet the performance standards of yield, health, and consistency required by Midwestern corn growers. More information is at AgriGoldGiants.com. or at 800-262-7333.
Iowa Senator Chuck Grassley says support in Congress for the renewable fuel standard has weakened, but he still expects the RFS to survive. While the House may take action to weaken the RFS, Grassley does not expect such legislation to get consideration in the Senate. He has this take on the current political support for ethanol and biofuels.
I think it's weak in the House of Representatives, and I think it's weaker than it has been in the United States Senate, but I think we can keep it from being repealed.
Grassley says there is a bit of a difference between the ethanol tax break that expired at the end of 2011 and the RFS, which is permanent law.
So the law has to be changed. It has to be signed by the president. I think it'll be difficult to get a bill changing it in the United States Senate. And I think if the president is as supportive of biofuels and alternative energy as he says he is, that it'd have a tough time getting through to the president.
Grassley previewed his remarks this week before the 2013 Biofuels Conference.
Repealing the RFS would harm the environment, harm our balance of trade, and harm our rural economy and the job creation in a lot of rural towns that we thought would never exist.
Some farm lobbyists in Washington, D.C. for last week's House RFS hearings were surprised by the RFS loss of support, but Grassley concludes the RFS support is strong enough in the Senate to keep it, but weaker than what it should be for the value it has.
Agricultural programming is made possible by Farm Credit of Illinois, offering financial products and services specifically for the agriculture industry, including farm real estate and operating loans, crop insurance, and point-of-sale financing, as well as farm cash management solutions.
You're listening, of course, to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media on this Wednesday afternoon. Let's take time now to check the cash grain market. On the phone line with us from the Andersons Climbers Facility in Logansport, Indiana, is Scott Butcher. Good afternoon to you, Scott. How are you today?
Actually, you got Steve, and Scott got tied up.
Oh, that's okay, Mr.
Lindeberg. No
problem. How are you, Mr. Lindeberg?
Good, and yourself?
I'm doing very, very well.
Good.
So tell me about the market for corn in your area.
I had a little bit of push and interest today in the trade, where we had opportunity there to for farmers as well as commercials to sell on a bit of a rally. I certainly think we look at weather and how the market remains very weather sensitive. This additional moisture as well as cooler temperatures starting to leave us with the opinion of maybe harvest not quite as quickly to approach as what we once thought. We certainly knew we'd be delayed, but now we begin to question how much green stock we will continue to see in the later part of September, which leaves us starting to feel a little bit of a panic coming in for corn supply those first 15 days.
Is that panic justified in your opinion, and does it have to do with the amount of aflatoxin that's left in the corn crop, in the corn from the old crop last year?
A little bit, probably on the aflatoxin side, I would say more so. I think it's justified in the fact that the market lost value a little too quickly. With knowing the processors got bought up for the month of August, pushed their inventory into the late part of August, but banking on the idea that 2 weeks ago new crop was progressing much quicker than we expected with a late planting season. Now we see that shift a little back to the idea that going to need a few more old bushels there to survive on in September, especially as this corn remains a little wetter in the field those first 15 days.
Will futures or cash lead it higher? And what's a good number on the top side?
I think futures definitely showing a little bit of that, panic today, putting some value back into it. More so that than basis. If we would probably see the basis counteract into that cash price if we lose a little value on the Chicago side of things. But really, in my opinion, as we start to look at cash levels, I think anything above that. $6 mark cash versus the December is what we closed at this evening. Very ideal level right now, but at the same time, keeping in mind that selling on a rally is certainly the thing that we're continuing to push right now. As volatile as the market is, we can lose that value in the snap of a finger.
Thanks so much, Stephen.
You betcha.
Stephen Lindeberg at the Andersons Climbers Facility in Logansport, Indiana, back in two with the weather forecast.
It's National Raspberry Cake Day. In medieval Europe, wild raspberries were considered medicinal. When settlers from Europe arrived in America, they found the natives already eating and drying berries. On this day in agricultural history in 1790, the first U.S. patent was granted to Samuel Hopkins of Vermont. The patent was for a process for producing potash and pearl ashes. Potash was used in soap and fertilizer. Pearl ashes were used in baking. It produced carbon dioxide gas in dough used in the first quick breads. By the way, the patent was signed by President George Washington. In 1859, Theobald Smith was born. An American microbiologist, he linked Texas cattle fever with a parasite spread by blood-sucking ticks. In 1921, there were reports that it rained frogs in Sterling, Connecticut. And in 1923, Stephanie Kwolek was born. An American chemist, she created a new high-performance fiber, a liquid polymer that, after being spun, was five times stronger than steel with half the density of fiberglass. Kevlar today is used to make, among other things, rope, gloves, and building materials. And that's this day in agricultural history.
Support for today's broadcast comes from ADM. Their FarmerView mobile site features up-to-date futures, weather, market commentary, and local bids, and offers ADM customers access to contracts, deliveries, and payments. Available at adm.com/farmerview.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. It is the 31st day of July, the last day of the month. On the phone line with us to take a look at the weather forecast is Drew Lerner. He's at World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City. Good afternoon to you, Drew.
Good afternoon, Todd.
Well, tell me about the weather and what your expectations over the next week might be for the Midwest.
Well, we're going to have a pleasant mix of weather, especially for this time of the year. We're going to be looking at a little bit of a warming trend. Temperatures will likely get back into something a little bit more seasonal. These 60s and 70s we've seen in the last couple of days are certainly wonderful for human existence, but doesn't do a lot for the crops sometimes. And so we do need to get back to some significant heat accumulating units there so we can finish this crop out sometime before Christmas. The odds are pretty good, though, that we'll see temperatures coming back near normal. We'll look for highs back into the upper 70s and 80s here as we finish out the week, and maybe even more solidly into the 80s for a brief period of time late this coming weekend and maybe on Monday. After that, though, another surge of cool air will be dropping through the region, and as it does so, we'll likely find showers and thunderstorms preceding it, and that'll be favorable from providing some moisture for some of the areas that are still lingering on that dryness problem. We'll see some rain before then, actually. A little disturbance will likely be impacting a portion of the western Corn Belt already here tomorrow and continuing on into Friday. That disturbance will likely bring some relief to eastern parts of Nebraska as well as portions of western Iowa, and from there down into parts of southern and central Illinois, southwestern Indiana, western Kentucky, even the northern Delta. So all those areas will likely pick up on between a half inch and a couple of inches of rain. They'll certainly be welcome, and we'll look for the next event, like I said, early next week.
Can you recap the month of July for me and what it was like?
Well, July was actually a bit on the cool side across a big part of the Midwest. Temperatures were near normal across the north from Minnesota over to portions of Michigan, and then everybody else to the south was actually a little bit cooler than average. And because of that, of course, our crops are a little bit further behind in their development. The degree day accumulation is certainly below average. But for the last 30 days, we did see rainfall totals way below average in portions of northern Missouri, the northwestern two-thirds of Illinois, most of Iowa, of course, the western portions of Wisconsin, and a big part of Indiana. Even Michigan had less than usual precipitation. Many of these areas reported less than half of normal rain, and a big part of those drier areas in western Iowa, southwest Minnesota, and extreme eastern Nebraska saw less than 25% of normal.
And they had a little rainfall, I think, in the last week, though not enough to bring them up to par. Was it enough to keep the crop running fairly decent, though?
I think so. We got to the point where the crop was pretty seriously stressed there for about a week to 10 days, and it was a tough time. I think we probably lost a little yield, but for the most part, the showers came back in along with the cooler weather, I think, just in the nick of time. And we probably didn't lose as much as we might have worried about. But the proof will be in the pudding. We'll have to wait and see what we get when the harvest comes along.
Thank you so much, Drew.
Have a good day.
You too. Drew Lerner is with World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City. Joins us here on the Closing Market Report for this Wednesday afternoon. You have a great day. I'm U of I Extension's Todd Gleason.
Support for WILL Agriculture comes from Murray Wise Associates, LLC. Land auctions, farm management, financial services, and institutional and corporate real estate. Information on upcoming land auctions can be found at murraywiseassociates.com.